Welcome back to Offworld, the show where we talk about all things space exploration and pop culture. I'm Ariel Waldman.
And I'm Norm Chan. And for today's episode, we're doing something a little timely because just this last week, season 4 of The Expanse dropped on Amazon.
Yeah, so we've watched just the first couple of episodes. So we feel like today's episode is like spoiler light. We go two episodes in, but we're not going to spoil the whole season for you because we haven't even seen it ourselves.
Yeah, and this is the first time it's on Amazon because it had three seasons on Sci-Fi. The story could have wrapped up there, of course, based on the novels. We've been covering that on Tested. Adam's been on set, of course. But it's a perfect time to jump into The Expanse, even if you've not watched the show before or haven't caught up, which is something I had to do to catch up quickly on this because they are literally exploring new worlds. We have a great guest this week, and we're going to dive into the world building of the show and have fun with it. So yeah. Listen.
Okay, so The Expanse Season 4 just came out. I'm really excited to discuss this with both of you. We've got, obviously, Norm joining us today, but I'm really excited to have Violet Blue here on the show. Violet, please say a little bit about what you do and what you're doing related to The Expanse.
Thank you, Ariel. So I'm a writer by trade, and I've authored a couple dozen books. I just finished a giant book and in between projects a little bit. But one of the things that I've been working on sort of secretly for the past year is a big sort of Expanse fan show with my co-creator, Scotland Simons, in Seattle. And it's been a blast. We're finally able to like start to talk about it a little bit. So I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. And it's all about like the prequel to essentially The Expanse is the idea, right? Like,
right. Well, the show that we started working on is called Flip and Burn. And the idea was we were really inspired by the Expanse RPG coming out. But we wanted to do something that was a combination of Expanse RPG, but also traditionally shot and traditionally set, with sort of the traditional way that you would shoot a show as a controlling element for our four main character players who would then develop characters and develop scenes and sort of go through this world that we created with the Expanse RPG, which had added like a really fun random element to the way that we could do story creation and character development. But what the great thing was that we were like, well, we don't really want it to run at the same time as The Expanse. You know, this is a fan show. We kind of got obsessed with the idea of doing something before the world of The Expanse, something roughly around 10 to 15 years before the show started. And when I started working on writing it, I realized that there were a lot of really, really interesting things about Arrow Station that were questions left unanswered. So what we decided to do was base the majority of our story on Arrow Station.
Yeah, and for people who are not as well-versed with The Expanse, Eros is the asteroid, one of the asteroids that people are like living within that seems to have like a really rich culture to it that isn't fully expanded upon. So that's like really awesome. So getting into like season four, we've all watched a couple of episodes into season four, which is like so exciting. It's now up on Amazon. And I don't know, like what did you generally think about the world building and everything sort of that we saw in the first couple of episodes?
I mean, it's a whole new world, right? I mean, that's the big thing, and it's fresh. Mm-hmm. So the show and the books, when you started it, it was like, it's like what you said, it was ripe for so much backstory, things that just spark the imaginations of readers and viewers. Like how, like what was it like to get on Eros or Mars in the mm-hmm. early days? Now you can finally get a sense of that. And guess what? It's just as messy
as
you imagine it would be in the universe of The Expanse and all the geopolitics.
Yeah.
I love how when we first start out, we sort of get to visit all the characters. And we sort of get to figure out like, okay, here's what happened to this character. And here's, you know, like here's what happened to Clarissa Mao. And, you know, what's going on with the Rocinante. And I feel like that's really neat. But also you kind of get this snapshot of where these characters ended up after their intense conflicts and their journeys. And I think, especially because I'm so obsessed with Belter culture, I find it really fascinating that now Belters are sort of stuck in this position of policing the ring and still sort of under the thumb of the Inners. And you get this overall vibe of the more things change, the more they stay the same. And you can kind of feel that in the characters in the way that they're sort of like, okay.
Yeah. And to catch people up, like, so end of season three, essentially, they go into the ring, a lot of conflicts ensue, and then sort of ends with multiple rings opening up inside of the ring, and no one really knows like what that's about. And so season four really kicks off with kind of taking like a breath and a pause and saying, okay, yeah, where did these characters end up? Where have they been since that conflict arose? And so if everyone went back to their home, you have Bobby who went back to Mars, mm-hmm. you have Holden who went back to Earth, and you see everyone, you know, kind of chilling out a little bit. Before then, they start discovering that these rings that opened up are really portals into other exoplanets and other worlds that are thought to be habitable, just readily habitable,
yeah.
as opposed to needing to terraform them like Mars or something. And so then, you know, it is very well suited for the Expanse, we are going from the solar system to expanding into seeing our first exoplanet and mm-hmm. getting to see that world. And that world, at least that we're exploring initially, is Illis, which is, they say is the brother sibling of Ganymede.
Mm-hmm.
And on Illis, we see metal life forms, and we see this weird mysterious tower that might be part of the protomolecule, but we don't really know. But Violet, you rightfully brought up like the whole like balance of power. Essentially, the mm-hmm. rings are still being policed. They don't the UN, the Earth, the Inners essentially want to not just let anyone through these rings because they don't want just chaos to ensue.
Right.
And the Belters have got this, you know, truce with the UN to try and uphold that, and they're trying to like uphold this truce by helping police for the UN, but
I think they can tell they're being used. You know, I mean, it's typical, right? The Belters caught in the middle, you know, and I think it's funny. One of the characters that really kind of caught me in terms of like their character arc was Ashford, because when we see Ashford, he's still in his uniform. And I don't know if you remember the, you know, drummer making fun of him for wearing the uniform and him saying that Anderson Dawes, you know, give him a hard time about it too. But for Ashford, that uniform really represented something. It represented bringing Belters together in unity and showing a united front. And now he's, it's basically almost like a mall cop uniform, you know, and he's like, now he's like, whoop, whoop, there's the police, you know, and you can tell that it's just, it's kind of breaking him.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that, I mean, because the actor is so brilliant, just by what's going on with the expressions and the things that he's dealing with. And he's dealing with, you know, people that he has tried to unite coming at him and being angry at him and defiant and wanting to topple this sort of new order. And I think that translates really interestingly, too, with what we see when they land on the planet, because we suddenly basically have three different factions that all have three different goals. And we get to see the different approaches in the way that they sort of encounter each other. And the crew of the Rocinante, I think, is probably their approach to me is the most interesting. And you really see in that moment when Naomi Nagata takes her first walk out onto the planet and she falls, and Holden holds everybody back from going to pick her up and going to save her. And that's the vibe, I think, that we're getting of the Rocinante crew as space explorers. Rather than intervening without permission, he's, you know, Holden is like, no, wait for her to ask for help. Like, don't force help. And it's a very consent-based approach to dealing with this whole new situation, which is, of course, the opposite of what's going on with the scientists. And you know, the Belters, as usual, are just reacting.
And her specifically, that whole journey she has to take throughout that first episode to prepare her body walk on the planet, right?
And first time being in essentially 1G for someone who's lived in the asteroid belt.
Kind of emotional and like the mental, like the motivation to go through that, which is, it's not easy. But it goes to why, like her motive, why does she want to do that? And the connection that she feels with, you know, these refugees and these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I loved the way, this was shot. I think, if you haven't watched these episodes yet and you're listening, definitely like get like a big screen TV because they shoot this in like super widescreen when they arrive on this exoplanet. And I feel like it's a way of essentially showing a Belter's first time on a planet with wide horizons and, you know, and she's spent her whole life in very small confined spaces, and so the way they shot it is super widescreen, sort of super cast in a blue sort of color to sort of denote that it maybe it's a different planet. Mm-hmm. But they shot it in a quarry, I can't pronounce that word, quarry one of those.
Yeah.
You know, they shot it in a, like this really interesting place that was like, I guess like 90 minutes out of Toronto or something. Oh, that cool. was, that was kind of otherworldly. And I feel like they wanted a lot of emphasis on, okay, we're now on a planet that we've never seen before, which is just really beautiful. Another aspect of the power sort of balance that I wanted to get into, though, is I feel like season four really actually opens up a whole new power structure and sort of corporate power, because you see the, I think it's the RCE, go to the planet and they're wanting to mine the planet and they're wanting to kick off the refugees and people who have immigrated to the planet so that they can mine it for lithium, I believe. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so then we see sort of the UN utilizing corporate power as a way of like kicking out immigrants. Mm-hmm. And I feel like corporations haven't come up as strongly in the previous seasons as it does here.
I think they've always been at play in the background, though, you know, and I think that's it's kind of interesting, too, because we haven't really been informed that much also about how much corporate control there is in politics, you know, in Mars politics and in UN politics. But obviously it's there because Jean-Pierre Mao got away with so much and he was controlling so many parts of politics. So
I mean, it's the number one thing they mentioned when they first talk about the planet. It's not about the terrain. It's about it's rich in lithium, mm-hmm. and it can be used for jobs. And, you know, it's not about the scientific research and figure out what's the, like, all the unexpected dangers or life forms there. It's about let's get people there now because this is what people need right now, these constituents.
Yeah. I mean, Norm, what did you think about just generally, like, watching these first couple of episodes of what were sort of the hooks for you of the things that you wanted to, like, learn more about or hope that you see more of in season four?
I mean, definitely the sense of identity, right? What it means for these people to have identity on the planet now versus where they came from. Because you said, like, the show opens up with everyone going home. And home for the Expanse is, like, one of the big conceits of the show. Home mm-hmm. is not just Earth, it's Mars, it's the belt. And now there's a whole new type of home. And so for that to develop, where, you know, where will people feel like can they feel like they're at home in this place? Mm-hmm. And, you know, how that develops. And it is a big cheat because you can get to an exoplanet, right, just through a ring. Mm-hmm. And for a show that's all about hard science fiction and distances and the fact that you can't do a live call with someone unless you're really close to them, right, on a ship, right, you can have a planet that's fresh. Mm-hmm. And so that's really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I don't know. There's so much to dig into. For me, the stuff that I got really excited about was there was a little bit more elaboration of sort of how Mars came to be, about the fact that it took many generations to terraform Mars, mm-hmm. and the contrast of that with the exoplanets that are just ready to go. You just, you know, land on them and it's like, yeah, fully habitable. Because they were also talking about, I think, like the clouds on Mars and developing those over time and having a magnetosphere, that they got like a magnetosphere working. And those little like details were really like informative, I felt, for like better world building. Mm-hmm. Violet, like when you were watching these episodes, like were you picking up on like little things that you felt were informative for building out the prequels fully? Or
absolutely. I mean, there've been little bits and pieces sort of sprinkled throughout the whole, you know, everything that we've seen so far in all of the seasons. You know, in the first episodes, you know, like, you know, the things that got me really interested about Eros were things like, you know, Arthur Ehrenreich saying that it was the murder capital of the universe, basically. And, you know, a cop on Ceres saying that it was a garbage dump. But then when our, you know, when our characters got to Eros, like right before it ended, we could see it was in decline. And, you know, the Avasarala spy was saying, oh, you know, you should have seen this place. It was the jewel of the belt. And considering now that we know, you know, that there have been generations on Mars. So obviously we have generations in the belt. And so there were generations on Eros as well. And so that, you know, goes into some of the questions that I'm building, which is, you know, what were their traditions? What were the stories they told their children? You know, what were their rituals around death and memory, and how did they, you know, how did they ascribe meaning, and what does it look like when belters actually can plant something and stay there for a little bit, you know, which is something that they've been systematically and categorically denied the entire time that they've been out there. So it's going to be really exciting for me to see, because it's like, okay, we're taking Belters, and you know, they're making a home. They're taking a stand. They actually want to stay put. What does that look like? I also find it really fascinating that not everyone thinks it's a good idea in the Belt. You know, drummer doesn't think they should be there. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is very fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there's some underlying context there, I feel, of like, you know, perhaps because, you know, the thing that opened up all these planets is the protomolecule. And that's actually something that we haven't talked about, which is a whole part of like season four, which is like, what is the protomolecule? Like, what does it want? What are its motivations? Does it have one motivation? Is it one thing? I mean, mostly it seems like no, but it's hard to really suss out, like, with this protomolecule and like the permeations of it in Miller and everything. You know, if it's sort of like wanting to help Holden and humans, or if it's wanting to hurt them, or if it's wanting to take them over, or if it just doesn't really care.
Right.
I don't know. Like, there's so much to dig into with the protomolecule. Yeah.
I also feel like that's part of the show that I'm okay if they let that play a long game, mm-hmm. because like that's the MacGuffin. It was like the genesis for right. for the three seasons, and now you have it. It has literally opened these new worlds. Like, I would be okay if that didn't become a regular, mm-hmm. ongoing concern for them, because there's already so much in just the personal relationships and the political relationships to drive the story. I really feel like is the heart of the show, the season. That, I mean, yes, it can. It's questions will need to be answered. They've laid some seeds for those questions, but I'm okay if that lingers a little longer.
It's exciting to talk about the questions, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I like that. You know, it's, you're saying, does this thing have a purpose? Mm-hmm. Is it sinister? Is it amoral?
Mm-hmm.
You know, does it care? And then, you know, when we get to Illus, we see it has structures.
Yeah.
And it has form. And what is that? Like, mm-hmm. what is it going to do? And these structures, they look incredible. I mean, just the set design and the colors and the cinematography on this season is mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. But these structures are just, they look so Giger-esque, but they also look like thorns coming out of the planet. And you're just like,
yeah,
what is, are these churches? Are they, you know, are they machines? Is this machinery? Like, what is going on here?
I mean, I certainly hope they start revealing more about it, because essentially they've placed Holden and his crew as essentially proto-molecule hunters
at
this point, where it's like, if there wasn't this weird structure on this exoplanet, they wouldn't have been sent to the exoplanet. They would have let mm-hmm. the corporate power battle out the immigrants and, you know, however that would have gone. But you know, I feel like, yeah, Holden and crew are there to be like, well, what is it doing there? Is it going to hurt these people? Is it going to help them? And, you know, why are all these rings opened anyway? Is it, you know, is it a trap?
Right, right.
There's so much of it. And, you know, I mean, one of the fun episodes from a previous season was when the protomolecule got, you know, sent into Venus, and then one of the ships near Venus sort of went down with it and, mm-hmm. and exploded, and our own Adam Savage was part of that ship that exploded. So yeah, it's this weird thing where they're sort of both cooperating with a protomolecule and also not exactly trusting it either. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't even know where it'll go from there. But obviously, you know, it's this kind of character unto itself that mm-hmm. is extremely mysterious, almost like a no face in a way.
It becomes an allegory for, you know, the colonization, right? This season is about colonization.
Absolutely.
And all those stories about colonization, whether it's in science fiction or in our history, you know, there are, you don't colonize without considering what's already there, and whether it's life, whether it's civilization, you know, and this has got to be some form of that,
mm-hmm.
And represents a danger probably initially, but it's about the lack of understanding and the rush to do it, which we see, you know, that's been the motivating factor for all these factions.
Yeah. Well, and some of the hard science fiction also that I really like about this new season is they get really into the gravity drugs for
yes.
Naomi to go through in order to be able to tolerate 1G. She's not just exercising a ton, but she's taking like what seem to be these extremely painful gravity drugs that nearly knock her out every time. And she's like hiding from everyone else just how intense these drugs are.
Right.
And I don't know. It's interesting because this is what I love about The Expanse. They really break down, like, okay, you know, whether or not it's realistic that you would have gravity drugs, imagine that they would be this painful. Would you actually go through with it? And I mean, from what I saw, I wouldn't.
I love that idea. Also made me think of what the reverse of that would be, right? I guess the conceit is, would you undergo some type of physiological transformation to yourself voluntarily to make your life as a space explorer easier? And whether that's from someone going from low microgravity to 1G environments or higher than 1G environments, or even, you know, in the future, if there was a way for astronauts to change their bodies to make life easier in space, is that a path forward in real life, right? Because right now, the astronauts do have, like, our bodies are not made to live in there.
And, not yet.
Yeah, right. Or because we don't have the generations of changing our actual bodies.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, were there any, like, other, I guess, new characters or new widgetry that you saw in this season that, like, you particularly liked that was, like, new for this season?
I just one of my favorite Canadian actors is on the planet among the Belters. It's Chris Holden Reed, and I was really excited to see him. So
what role does he play?
He's one of the sort of higher up in the Belter colonists, and it's just fantastic. I mean, some of the new actors that they've brought in are powerhouse actors for sure.
Yeah, it's always nice to, like, see the cast expand and sort of wonder, like, who's going to be recurring and not. I personally really liked the fact that the corporate crew that was going down to the planet had a planetary biologist with them.
Yes.
And so it's like they get attacked by, you know, these are spoilers, but we've already warned people. You know, they get attacked by these, like, metal life forms. And they're like, that can't be a life form. That's, like, pure metal. And she's like, oh, a way to think like an earthling, essentially. Like,
yeah.
You know, she's like, I do planetary biology. Like, this is totally normal. And, like, it's cool to have sort of a scientist actually, like, with everyone and be explaining, like, oh, yeah, I go to planets all the time and find weird stuff.
Right.
That was, like, really
That's
cool.
That's really fun. Where there's, I think, the banter. They
yeah,
have.
Absolutely.
It's so casual. And that's really the future they imagine, where space travel can be relatively routine. It's like everyone's, and then so the reminders of how easy, how dangerous space is, even as you're getting onto a, you know, a planet or a 1G environment, that's what's shocking to them, and that's fun to watch.
Well, and just as dangerous are all the assumptions that people make. You know, I think the same character you were talking about later makes a reference to Naomi, assuming that she's an Earther. And Naomi has a great comeback that's basically like, okay, colonizer, you know. and it's these kind of assumptions that we start to see really come to the boiling point in the conflicts that are starting to begin in the settlement.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, gosh, there's so much to dive into. And yeah, we've only started just at the beginning of season four, but it's really exciting. I'm definitely going to be binge watching the entire season very shortly. So my final question, I guess, is, you know, The Expanse, we're out to exoplanets now, but we've seen Ganymede, we've seen Mars, we've seen Eros. I guess, you know, since I know that your favorite is Eros, if you had to choose anywhere else to live in the Expanse world other than Eros, what's your next favorite place?
Ceres. I tend to be attracted to the stations, but I'm also very attracted to Belter culture. I mean, I don't mean to, you know, like, diss on Mars or or Earth or anything like that, although I am pretty curious to see what exactly is going on in the social structure on Earth right now. Because clearly, at least we understand from the previous seasons, we've got, you know, people living in communes on beautiful plots of land like Holden's family, but then a whole lot of slums and, you know, people literally living in the gutters. So that's kind of interesting to me. But yeah, no, I would probably choose Ceres Station. I'd be curious to see Titan as well.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Did they actually show Titan in any of... I don't know if they've
shown it. I don't recall.
But yeah, I mean, why not? It would be awesome. Norm, do you have a favorite?
The moon.
Oh,
Luna. Yeah.
Yeah. I might go, you know, even though I might not want to stay there very long, what I saw of Ganymede, of just like the greenhouses that they had on Ganymede, was just like really beautiful. Like, maybe not a place I'd want to spend my whole life, but I'd definitely be interested to check out what that would be like. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
So clearly there's a lot of mystery and a lot more to unravel with the show. I've read some reviews, people who have already watched, you know, most of the season that Amazon sent out screeners say a lot, it ramps up. So I'm looking very forward to that.
Yeah, it ramps up both in storyline, but also as we discuss, you know, the cinematography is just absolutely beautiful. And it's just amazing to see that clearly they did get a little bit more budget to do different things and to sort of like set the scene more and really give you the feeling that The Expanse is properly expanding into new territory.
Mm-hmm. And if you're new to the idea of The Expanse, you know, we've pushed before, it is a show that tries to be true to the physics of space, a hard science fiction show, one of the few hard science fiction shows on TV or streaming right now. And while, yes, they do have these kind of MacGuffin-like devices that allow them to go to like extraordinary places, there's so much that if you're a science fan or space geek, you will appreciate about this show.
Yeah, it's really refreshing, not only from a physics point of view, but also from an astrobiology point of view. You have a lot of different sciences that are intersecting in The Expanse, and also, you know, medical devices that they get to explore, that what we talked about. So I feel like if you're a science geek and you haven't yet dove into The Expanse, there's a rich, rich environment for you to explore with The Expanse.
And of course, we'll be covering more shows. There's so many shows in this coming year, and movies, of course, science fiction and space movies. There's Star Trek Picard coming out in just a month's time. So we'll definitely be covering that on Offworld. Be sure to subscribe to the channel or to the podcast. You can just go to tested.com/offworld if you want to listen to the audio. Let us know what you think about season 4 of The Expanse, and we may come back and revisit it once we feel like people have had a chance to digest the season.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.